cast her a searching glance. "What are you afraid of?"
Just then, as if the night had foretold the moment, a vicious breeze raked across the terrace, whipping through Shahrazad's long black hair. Tendrils flew into her face, obscuring her features.
"I'm afraid of dying," she announced over the wind.
"And I'm afraid of losing to you." He stared at her, as the gust died down, as it finished toying with Shahrazad's tresses, winding them to and fro. When the last vestiges disappeared, that same errant lock from earlier in the day still hung in her eyes. She started to reach for it, but he caught her hand in one of his own and brushed the curl behind her ear gently. The fluttering in her stomach returned with a vengeance. "Tell me why you're here." It sounded entreating in his low voice. "I'm here to win."
"Promise me you won't kill me," she breathed back.
"I can't do that." "Then there's nothing more to say." As with the first night, Shahrazad was amazed by her ability to detach from reality. And again, she remained strangely grateful he never once tried to kiss her. Grateful, yet somewhat perplexed. She had kissed Tarik before, stolen embraces in the shadows of vaulted turrets. The illicit nature of these encounters had always thrilled her. At any time, a servant could have found them, or worse, Rahim could have caught them kissing, and he would have needled Shahrazad mercilessly, as he'd done from the moment he'd crowned himself the brother she'd never had. So, while she appreciated not having to kiss a murderer, it did appear odd for her new husband to refrain from this particular act, especially when it seemed a great deal less intimate than other things. Shahrazad found herself wanting to ask why, and her curiosity grew by the hour. "Stop it. It doesn't matter." Instead of rising to dress as he did, Shahrazad lingered on the bed and grabbed a large cushion, the color of bright carnelian. She pulled it against her chest and wrapped her slender arms around its center. He turned to face her when she did not join him by the table.
"I'm not hungry," she stated.
He inhaled, and she watched his shoulders move in time with his breath. Then he returned to the foot of the bed so that they were positioned on opposite ends, as far from each other as possible. So strange. Shahrazad rolled on her side and burrowed into the mass of silken pillows. Her bronze ankles dangled off the bed. The edges of the caliph's amber eyes tightened, ever so slightly.
"Would you like me to continue the story?" she said. "Saidi,
I almost thought you were above the use of honorifics now."
"Pardon?
Have you forgotten who I am, Shahrazad?" She blinked.
"No, Saidi."
"So then a lack of decorum just comes with your sense of comfort?"
"Inasmuch as bitter apathy does yours."
Again his shoulders rose and fell. "Tell me, why do you find it permissible to talk to me like this?"
"Because someone has to,"
she replied without hesitation.
"And you think it should be you?"
"I think it should be someone who isn't afraid of you, and though I do feel anxious in your presence, the more I see of everything around me, the less I have reason to fear you."
As soon as she said the words aloud, she was startled to realize their truth. In the single day she'd been his wife, she'd seen remarkably little of the bloodthirsty monster she'd expected. This time, it was much more than a mere flash of surprise that etched its way across his face. His astonishment burgeoned into dismay before it melted back into the landscape of emptiness that forever shrouded his features.
"You know nothing," he countered.
Shahrazad almost laughed at this.
"You're right, I know nothing. Would you care to educate me, Saidi?" It was a quiet taunt, a poisoned glass of wine, meant to intoxicate and exsanguinate, meant to compel him into exposing his weakness. please give me the rope from which to hang you.
Finish the story of Ajib, Sherzad.
The moment was lost, for now.
She smiled at him from across the bed. The shadow forming within the blue plume of smoke solidified and began to laugh. The caliph's shoulders relaxed. He eased forward.
Ajib scrambled back farther, his terror mounting. The laughter grew until it echoed across the black sand of Adamant's shore. Ajib covered his face with trembling hands, and from the depths of the shadow, a figure emerged. He was bald, with sharply tapered ears adorned in gold. His skin was blanched white and covered with raised markings in a language Ajib did not recognize. When the figure opened his mouth to speak, Ajib saw that every one of his teeth was filed to a razor-sharp point. Sherzad bunched a pillow below her neck and crossed her ankles. When the caliph's gaze flickered down her bare legs, her eyes widened in awareness, and he glanced away. Ignoring the rising warmth in her neck, she continued. Ajib was sure he was about to die. He clasped his hands before him and closed his eyes, offering a silent plea for a quick and painless end to a worthless life. So when the creature spoke to Ajib in a voice that shook the very ground they stood upon, his words were the last things Ajib expected to hear for a multitude of reasons. The creature said, "What question does my master wish to ask of me?" And Ajib just sat there speechless. The creature repeated himself. Ajib sputtered, almost inaudibly, "Question? What kind of questions do you speak of, O creature of the cup?" The creature laughed again and replied, "That was the first of my master's three questions. He is permitted three, and only three. After this, he has two questions remaining. The questions I speak of are the questions the master of the Bronze Chalice may pose to the all-knowing genie of the Bronze Chalice. I possess the answers to questions, past, present, and future. Choose them wisely, for once you ask three, you are a master no more." At this, the caliph smiled to himself. Ajib pitched to his feet, still reeling in disbelief. But the sharp mind of a thief was beginning to take control, and he quickly realized his foolishness had already cost him one precious question. So he stopped himself from speaking out of turn and succumbing to yet another trick by the clever genie before him. He formulated his next question carefully in his mind before posing it. Then he asked, "Genie of the Bronze Chalice, your master wishes to know the exact way to escape this island so as to reach his homeland without any further harm befalling his person." The genie grinned wickedly before bowing before Ajib. With a nod toward the mountain, the genie said, "Buried at the top of Adamant lies a boat with bolts of brass. Drag it to the shore and sail in the direction of the third brightest star in the night sky. After 20 days and nights, you will reach your homeland." His eyes wary, Ajib prodded further. "My question demanded that no further harm befall my person for the duration of this journey. Nowhere in your answer did you address food or water." The genie cackled once more. "My master learns faster than most. I shall direct you to a hidden spring near the westernmost point of the island. And as for food, I suggest you dry enough fish for the journey." "That seems rather convenient," the caliph interjected. "The genie cannot be trusted."
"They rarely can be, in my opinion, Saidi," Sherzad grinned.
Over the next few days, Ajib followed the genie's instructions. He brought the boat to the shore and filled it with supplies for the journey. On the third night, by the light of a full moon, he set sail with the bronze chalice safely stowed in a pouch at his feet. For 10 days he traveled without event. He began to believe his journey might end well, that luck might be on his side after all, Hoping against hope, he started to dream of what to ask as his final question. Where could he obtain all the riches in the world? How could he win the love of the most beautiful woman in Baghdad? Sherazad paused for effect. And then, the boat started to creak. Briny water began seeping into the seams. Aghast, Ajib discovered the brass bolts were cracking at the edges, allowing the sea to flow in through the joints. In a panic, he tried to bail the water out of the boat with his bare hands. When he realized the futility of his efforts, he grabbed the chalice and rubbed its surface. The genie appeared and sat calmly on the boat's listing bow. "We are sinking," Ajib shouted at the genie. "You assured me I would reach my homeland without any harm befalling my person." The genie merely stared at Ajib, without a seeming care in the world. "You may ask me a question, master," he replied. Ajib glanced about frantically, wondering if now was the time to use his last and most precious question. Just then, on the horizon, Ajib saw the mast of another boat, a much larger vessel. He stood up and waved his hands, shouting for its attention. When it shifted in his direction, Ajib yelled with triumph, and the genie smirked before vanishing back into his chalice. Ajib boarded the vessel, trembling with gratitude, his clothes tattered, and his sun-stained face hidden beneath a scraggly beard. But lo! The caliph's eyebrows lifted. When the owner of the vessel emerged from below decks, Ajib was horrified to discover it was none other than the emir, the very man whose soldiers had chased him out of Baghdad and driven him to take this wretched voyage in the first place. For an instant, Ajib considered plunging headfirst into the sea, but when the emir smiled warmly at him and welcomed him aboard the ship, Ajib realized his disheveled appearance made him all but unrecognizable. So he broke bread at the emir's table, sharing in his food and drink as though he were unaware of his patron's identity. The elder gentleman was a consummate host, refilling Ajib's cup with his own hand and regaling him with tales of his many seafaring adventures. As the evening wore on, Ajib learned the emir had set sail several weeks ago in search of an island with a mysterious mountain at its center. Hidden on this island was a chalice with the mystical power to answer any question in the world, past, present, and future. The caliph leaned back on his elbow, his eyes warm. At this news, Ajib stilled. For, of course, the emir could be speaking of none other than the very chalice lying in Ajib's pouch. Feigning complete ignorance, Ajib asked the emir why he had decided to take on such a dangerous mission, especially in the twilight years of his life. The emir's eyes saddened. He confessed there was one reason, and one reason alone, for him to take to the sea in search of the Black Mountain and its hidden chalice. Several weeks ago, something very precious had been stolen from him, a ring that had belonged to his dead wife. It was all that remained of her, and he considered it his most prized possession. In the streets of Baghdad, a gifted thief had slipped the trinket from the emir's own hand and disappeared into the crowd with the stealth of a shadow. Ever since that afternoon, the emir had been haunted at night by the ghost of his dead wife, and he knew he had to recover that ring, whatever the cost. If he could ask the chalice where it was, he could appease his wife's spirit and restore honor to the memory of their love. So his question to an all-knowing genie would be about a mere trinket of love? The caliph interjected. A mere trinket? Love is a force unto itself, Saidi. For love, people consider the unthinkable, and often achieve the impossible. I would not sneer at its power. The caliph held her gaze. I am not sneering at its power. I am lamenting its role in this story. You are saddened by love's importance in the emir's life. He paused. I am frustrated by its importance in all our lives. Shahrazad's lips formed a sad smile.
That's understandable.
If a bit predictable. He inclined his head. Again, you presume to know a great deal for a day and two nights, my queen. Shahrazad averted her eyes and toyed with the corner of the red pillow in her arms. She felt a flush in her cheeks.
My queen?
At her silence, he stirred with discomfort.
You're right, Shahrazad murmured. I should not have said that.
He inhaled through his nose. An odd stillness seemed to stretch over the room.
And I should not have interrupted you. I'm sorry, he whispered.
Shahrazad wound the scarlet fringe of the pillow tight between her fingers.
Please continue, he said.
She looked up at him and nodded. Ajib listened to this tale with a growing sense of unease. Obviously, he was the perpetrator of the theft. The ring in question had been discarded in his panicked attempt to flee the Emir's soldiers. He had no intention of turning over the chalice before he had a chance to determine what his all-important final question would be. And if the Emir discovered Ajib had the chalice, he would likely kill him to procure it. Even more imminent was the danger that someone would recognize the thief responsible for the Emir's heartache. Ajib resolved to stay close by the man's side for the remainder of the journey and use every means available to conceal his identity. Shahrazad sat up carefully when she noticed a faint light streaming through the edge of the screens leading to the terrace.
And it begins again.
For the next few months, the ship sailed the waters in search of the Mountain of Adamant, with Ajib managing to keep them safely off course. In that time, he learned a great deal from the Emir about his many experiences and ultimately about his life. He grew to admire the Emir, and the Emir soon saw in Ajib an intelligent young man with a wide aptitude for knowledge and a courageous heart. Ajib became a capable sailor. He realized men could respect him for being more than just a thief. They could respect him for being a man of honor, upon whom they could rely. Alas, time did not stand on their side. The aging Emir grew sick, and they were forced to turn back to port. Soon it became clear he was dying. Every day became that much more precious. Ajib watched in horror as his mentor, as his friend began wasting away before his very eyes. He thought about asking the genie if there was a way to save him, but he knew it was beyond the realm of possibility. The dawn crept up the screen with a haunting pallor. As soon as the boat docked, Ajib knew what he had to do. He fled from the boat with nothing but the chalice in hand. Once he cleared the docks, he scrubbed at the chalice's edge and demanded the genie tell him where he could find the ring. The genie laughed uproariously when he realized Ajib was wasting his final wish on such a question, but told Ajib the ring was on the pinky finger of one of the most notorious mercenaries in Baghdad. Ajib wasted no time seeking him out. The fight that ensued over the ring was bloody and brutal. Ajib was forced to turn over his entire trove of spoils in exchange for safe passage through the den of cutthroats. His eyes blackened, and his body bruised. He returned to the ship with nothing but the ring in hand. Dawn had arrived, in all its white gold splendor, and Shahrazad was certain the caliph was aware of it. She blazed ahead, undeterred. The Emir lay gasping for breath. When he saw Ajib, he reached for him. Ajib knelt at his bedside and placed the ring on his finger. Through bloodshot eyes, the Emir took in Ajib's bruises.
My son, he rasped, I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Ajib began to weep. He started to confess his identity, but the Emir stopped him.
I knew who you were the moment you came aboard my ship. Promise me that for the rest of your life, you will not steal from your fellow man,
but that you will work alongside him to better the lives of those around you. Ajib nodded and wept harder, and then, clutching Ajib's hand, the emir died with a peaceful smile on his face. Afterward, Ajib discovered the emir had willed his entire estate to him, passing along his title as though Ajib were truly his son. Ajib soon chose a wife, and the wedding of the new emir was a celebration the like of which Baghdad had not seen in many years. Shahrazad stopped, her eyes flitting to the sunlight streaming from the terrace. "Are you finished?" the caliph asked softly. She shook her head. At the wedding of the new emir was a guest from a faraway land, a magician from Africa in search of a magic lamp. But in truth, he was not really looking for the lamp. He was looking for a young boy named Aladdin. A muscle rippled along the caliph's jaw. "This is a new story." "No, it's not. It's part of the same story." A knock sounded at the door. Shahrazad rose from the bed and grabbed her shamla. With shaking hands, she tied it about her waist. "Shahrazad, you see, Aladdin was an excellent gambler, a trickster of the highest pedigree. His father before him was..." "Shahrazad, it's not a different story, Saidi," she said in a calm, quiet tone, fisting her hands against the fabric of her robe to hide their treachery. He unfurled to his feet as another knock struck at the door, this one more insistent than the last. "Come in," the caliph instructed. When four soldiers and the Sharban of Ray entered her bedchamber, Shahrazad felt the floor beneath her begin to sway. She locked her knees and stood ramrod straight to prevent her body from betraying any sign of weakness. "Why is Jalal's father here?" "General Al-Khori, is something wrong?" the caliph asked. The Sharban bowed before his king, a hand to his brow. "No, Saidi," he hesitated. "But it is morning." His eyes darted in Shahrazad's direction. He paled, refusing to meet her gaze. "He can't, he... Does he want to kill me? Why would he want me to die?" When the caliph made no move to stop him, the Sharban motioned to the guards with his head. They strode to Shahrazad's side, and her heart flew into her throat. "No!" A guard reached for her arm. When his hand closed around her wrist, Shahrazad saw the caliph's features tighten. She yanked her arm from the guard's grasp, as though it were a flame held too near her flesh. "Don't touch me!" she yelled. When another guard seized her shoulder, she slapped his hand out of the way. "Are you deaf? How dare you touch me? Do you know who I am?" A note of panic entered her voice. Not knowing what else to do, she locked upon her enemy. The tiger eyes were torn, wary, and then calm. "General Al-Khori?" "Yes, Saidi. I'd like to introduce you to the Mountain of Adamant." The Sharban stared back and forth between the caliph and Shahrazad. "But Saidi, I don't understand. You cannot..." The caliph swiveled to face the Sharban. "You're right, General. You do not understand, and you may never understand. Regardless, I'd like to introduce you to the Mountain of Adamant." The caliph glanced back at Shahrazad, a ghost of a smile playing across his lips. "My queen." The beginning is the end. Tariq's Ridda was covered in a thick layer of dust. Sand clung to every exposed part of his skin. His dark bay stallion was sleek with sweat, and white foam was beginning to collect around the iron bit at its mouth. Rahim's grumblings grew louder with each passing hour, but Tariq could see the city gates of Ray looming on the horizon, and she refused to stop.
By all that is holy, can we ease our pace for a spell?
Rahim yelled for the fifth time in as many minutes.
Go ahead, ease your pace, and then tumble from your saddle. You should be quite a feast for the crows,
Tariq shot back.
We've been riding with fire at our backs for 2 days straight.
And as a result, we're nearly there.
Rahim slowed his horse to a canter, rubbing the sweat from his brow. Don't misunderstand me. I'm just as concerned about Shazi as you are, but what use will you be to anyone half-starved and near dead?
We can sleep under a cloud of perfume once we reach Uncle Reza's house, Tariq replied. We just have to get to Ray.
I have to. He spurred his horse faster.
It will do you no good to worry so. If anyone can beat the odds, it's Shazi.
Tariq reined in his Arabian to match pace with Rahim.
She never should have had to try.
This is not your fault.
Do you think this is about guilt?
Tariq exploded.
I don't know. All I know is that you feel a responsibility to fix it, and I feel a responsibility to you and to Shazi.
I'm sorry, Tariq said. I have no right to yell at you, but I would have done anything to prevent this. The thought of her...
Stop. Don't punish yourself.
They rode in silence for a few minutes.
I do feel guilty, Tariq admitted.
I know. I felt guilty when Shiva died, too.
Why?
Because I didn't know what to say to Shazi after the death of her best friend. After the death of my cousin. I didn't know what to say to anyone. My mother was a complete disaster. My aunt... Well, I don't think there was anything anyone could have done to prevent her death in the end. And Shahrzad was just so quiet.
That alone unnerved me, Rahim recalled in a rueful tone.
I should have known then. I should have seen.
Would that you were a seer of the future, Tariq Imran al-Ziyad, Rahim sighed.
Would that we all were. Instead of being a useless third son, I'd be a rich man in the arms of a beautiful wife, with curves for days and legs for leagues.
I'm not joking, Rahim. I should have realized she would do something like this.
I'm not joking either, Rahim frowned. You can't foresee the future, and there's nothing you can do about the past.
You're wrong. I can learn from it.
Tariq dug his heels into his stallion's flanks, and the horse shot forward, painting a dark smudge across the sand.
And I can make sure it never happens again.
It was mid-morning when Tariq and Rahim dismounted from their horses in the middle of Reza bin Latif's elegant compound, deep in the heart of Ray. A gleaming oval fountain of Mazarine-glazed tile graced the center of the courtyard, and terracotta stones, cut in an elaborate hexagonal fashion, lined the surroundings. Green vines crept up each of the columned arches. At the base of every arch were small flower beds filled with violets, hyacinths, daffodils, and lilies. Torches of smelted bronze and iron adorned the walls, awaiting nightfall for the chance to showcase their faceted grandeur. And yet, for all the home's beauty, there was an aura of sadness to the space. A sense of tremendous loss no amount of splendor could ever fill. Tariq placed Zariah on her makeshift mews in the far corner of the courtyard. She squawked with discomfort at her new surroundings and the unfamiliar perch, but quieted as soon as Tariq began to feed her. Rahim crossed his arms, and a cloud of dust puffed out around him. The damned bird is fed before I am? Where is the justice in this?
Ah, Rahim John, I can see little has changed over the past few years.
Tariq turned at the sound of this familiar voice. Standing beneath the curtain of vines in a nearby archway was his uncle.
Both young men stepped forward and lowered their heads, pressing their fingertips to their brows in a sign of respect. Reza bin Latif walked into the sun with a sad smile on his face. The dark hair on his head had thinned out even more since the last time Tariq had seen him, and his neatly trimmed mustache was peppered with a good deal more gray as well. The lines at his eyes and mouth that Tariq had always associated with humor had deepened to reflect something decidedly incongruous. The smile of a soul haunted by specters, all a part of the masquerade put on by a grief-stricken man whose cherished 17-year-old daughter had died one morning, only to be followed by his wife 3 days later, a wife who couldn't bear to live in a world without her only child. "Uncle," Tariq put out his hand. Reza grasped it warmly. "You made it here quite quickly, Tariq John. I was not expecting you until tomorrow." "What happened to Shazi? Is she alive?" Reza nodded. "Then," Reza's sad smile turned faintly proud, "by now the whole city knows about our Shahrzad." Rahim paced closer, and Tariq's empty fist clenched at his side. The only young queen to survive not one, but two sunrises in the palace, Reza continued. "I knew it," Rahim said. "Only Shazi." Tariq's shoulders relaxed for the first time in 2 days. "How?" "No one knows," Reza replied. "The city is rife with speculation, namely that the caliph must be in love with his new bride. But I am not of the same mind. A murderer such as this is not capable of..." He stopped short, his mouth drawn in sudden fury. Tariq leaned over, clasping his uncle's hand tighter. "I have to get her out of there," he said. "Will you help me?" Reza stared back at his handsome nephew, at the determined lines and the set jaw. "What are you planning to do?" "I'm going to rip out his heart." Reza gripped Tariq's palm hard enough to hurt it. "What you're suggesting, it's treason."
"I know.
And to succeed, you'd have to break into the palace or start a war."
"Yes."
"You can't do this alone, Tariq John."
Tariq held Reza's gaze in silence. "Are you prepared to start a war for her, regardless of whether or not she continues to survive?" Reza asked in a gentle tone. Tariq grimaced.
"He deserves to die for what he's done to our family. I won't permit him to take anything else from me, or from anyone else for that matter. It's time for us to take something from him, and if it means seizing his kingdom in order to do it..."
Tariq took a deep breath.
"Will you help me, uncle?"
Reza bin Latif looked around at his beautiful courtyard. Ghosts tormented him in every corner. His daughter's laughter lilted into the sky. His wife's touch slipped through his fingers like a handful of sand. He could never let them go. Their memories, no matter how faded and broken, were the only things he had left. The only things worth fighting for. Reza glanced back at the Emir Nasir al-Ziyad's son, the successor to the fourth largest stronghold in Khorasan, with a lineage of royalty. Tariq Imran al-Ziyad, a chance to right a wrong, and make his memories whole again.
Come with me.
The Shamshir. "Get up," Shahrzad moaned and drew the pillow over her face in response. "Get up now."
"Go away,"
Shahrzad grumbled. At that, the pillow was unceremoniously snatched from her grasp and slammed against her cheek with a force that shocked her. She sat upright, sheer outrage eclipsing her exhaustion.
"Are you deranged?"
she shouted. I told you to get up, Despina replied in a matter-of-fact tone. Not knowing what else to do, she pelted the pillow back at Despina's head. Despina caught it with a laugh. Get up, Sherzad, brat Khalifa of Khorasan, queen of queens. I've been waiting all morning for you, and we have someplace to go. When Sherzad finally rose from the bed, she saw yet again that Despina was flawlessly garbed in another draped garment and polished until every facet of her pale skin was artfully rendered in the light flowing from the terrace. Where did you learn that? Sherzad asked, with begrudging admiration. Despina positioned her hands on her hips and peaked an eyebrow. The clothes, the hair, that! Sherzad raked her fingers through her tangled mane as she clarified. At home, in the city of Thebes, my mother taught me. She was one of the most famous beauties in all of Cadmea, perhaps in all of the Greek Isles. Oh. Sherzad studied Despina's glossy curls and then proceeded to toss back the snarled mess in her hands. I wouldn't, Despina smirked. Wouldn't what? Attempt to bait me into complimenting you? Excuse me? Sherzad sputtered. I've encountered your kind many times before. The effortlessly lovely ones, the green sylphs of the world. They flail about without concern for their charms, but they suffer the same desire to be liked that we all do. Just because you don't know how to make the best of your many gifts does not mean they go unnoticed, Sherzad. But I could teach you if you like. Although, it seems you don't need my help. Despina winked. Obviously, the Caliph appreciates your charms as they are. Well, he's not a very particular man. How many wives has he had in the past 3 months alone? 60? 75? Sherzad retorted. Despina quirked her mouth. But he hasn't gone to see them at night. What? Usually they're chosen at random. He marries them and, well, you know what happens the next morning. Don't lie to me, Despina. I'm not. You were the first bride he sought out after the wedding. I don't believe her. In case you are wondering, I wasn't supposed to tell you that, Despina admitted. Then why did you? I don't know, she shrugged. Maybe I just want you to like me. Sherzad gave her a long, hard look. If you want me to like you, help me figure out what to wear. Also, where's the food? I'm starving. Despina grinned. I already laid out a long chemise and matching trousers. Get dressed and we can leave. But I haven't bathed. Where are you taking me? Do you have to spoil everything? Where are we going? Sherzad insisted. Tell me now. Fine, Despina exhaled. I'll tell you while you're getting dressed. She shoved the clothing at Sherzad and directed her behind the privacy screens. So, Despina began, last winter, the Caliph went to Damascus to visit the Malik of Assyria. And, while he was there, he saw the Malik's new bathhouse. It's this huge pool of water they keep warm with these special heated stones. The steam is supposed to do wonders for your skin. Anyway, the Caliph had one built here, in the palace. They just finished it. And? Obviously, I'm taking you there, Despina rolled her eyes. Obviously, I just don't understand why this is such cause for excitement. Because it's amazing and new, and you will be one of the first ones to try it. So he wants to boil me to death? Sherzad said acerbically. Despina snickered. I'm ready. Sherzad emerged from behind the screens, clad in simple pale green linen, with matching jade earrings and pointed gold slippers. She plaited her hair in a single braid down her back and strode to the door of the chamber. The Rajput was nowhere to be found. Where is he? Sherzad asked. Oh, he was dismissed for the day. What? Why? Because we're going to the bathhouse. He can't very well accompany us there, can he? Sherzad pursed her lips. No, but As Despina pulled the doors shut, Shahrazad saw her chew on her carmine-stained lower lip, as though she were concealing something.
Despina, where is the Rajput?
I told you. Dismissed.
That's fine, but where does he go when he's dismissed?
How should I know?
You know everything.
I don't know this, Shahrazad.
Why is she lying to me? I thought I wasn't allowed to go anywhere without the Rajput.
Where is she really taking me?
I'm not going anywhere until you tell me where my bodyguard is.
By Zeus, you are a nuisance, Shahrazad al-Kaizuran, Despina cried.
It's good you know that. It will save you time. Now answer my question.
No.
Answer me, you wretched Theban.
No, you horse's ass.
Shahrazad's mouth fell agape.
Listen to me.
We can either stand in the hallways of the palace and shout at each other, or you can let me have my way now and spare yourself the trouble. When I was 12, my best friend and I were falsely accused of stealing a necklace. The shopkeeper's 14-year-old son said he would let us go for a kiss each. I broke his nose, and my best friend shoved him in a trough of water. When we were confronted by his father, we denied the entire incident, and I had to sit outside our door for a whole night. It was the best sleep of my life.
And your point is, I never lose, nor am I afraid to spill blood.
Despina stared down at her. Fine. The Rajput is... He's in a tournament. The men are having a swordsmanship tournament this afternoon.
A calculating gleam entered Shahrazad's hazel eyes.
See, this is precisely why I didn't want to tell you, Despina groaned. And you can't go anyway. If the Caliph sees you there, he'll...
Is he fighting in the tournament?
Of course.
Then there is no way you're going to stop me.
He won't do anything to me,
Shahrazad announced, though her voice was laced with uncertainty.
I can't say the same for myself, Despina retorted. Fine. Is there a way to watch it so no one knows we're there?
Can we please just go to the bathhouse? Despina pleaded.
Of course. After the tournament. Holy Hera, I'm going to die as your handmaiden.
This is by far the most asinine thing I've ever done in the 6 years I've lived at the palace, Despina said quietly as they crouched behind a wall of tan stone. The latticework at its top afforded them a vantage point from which to see the sand-filled expanse below.
You can blame me, Shahrazad breathed back. Oh, I will. Make no mistake.
Have you ever seen one of these tournaments?
No, they're not meant for an audience.
Why is that?
I'm not sure, maybe because...
Despina gasped as the first soldier stepped onto the sand.
That might be the reason, Shahrazad joked with a slight hitch in her voice. He was clad in nothing but sirwal trousers and a burgundy tikka sash. Barefoot, no kamis, no rida. His bare chest glowed with sweat in the hot afternoon sun. In silence, he withdrew a large scimitar from his left hip. Its blade was narrow at the hilt and widened as it curved outward before tapering to a lethal point. The soldier raised the scimitar high.
Where is his opponent? Shahrazad asked.
How should I know?
The soldier began swinging his blade in the air, performing an extended drill. He danced across the sand, the silver sword cutting arc after arc through the bright blue sky. When he was finished, cheers and whistles of approval emanated from the sidelines.
They must start with drills before they launch into fighting, Despina decided.
Ever the smart Theban.
If I push you over, you'll look decidedly unqueenlike.
Several more soldiers showcased their drilling techniques before a hulking form materialized in the sand. His shoulders were immense, and every muscle appeared to strain beneath his copper skin.
My God, Shahrazad said.
He could crush my skull with his bare hands.
Despina snickered. When the Rajput drew his talwar into the sun, he paused for an eerie moment, the sword poised above his head.
Let's see what it means to be the best swordsman in Rey.
The second he brought the blade down was the last time Shahrazad remembered seeing it for the entire duration of the Rajput's demonstration. The slender talwar whipped through the breeze, curling over its master's arm as the Rajput stretched and dove into the sand. Then, near the end of the drill, he lifted his free hand to his mouth and blew over his open palm. A stream of fire extended onto the sword. The talwar was ablaze. He whirled it over his head, slicing the screaming dragon of a weapon downward. With a final thrust into the sand, he extinguished the flames. The soldiers raised an ear-splitting chorus on the sidelines. Shahrazad and Despina stared at one another in shared amazement.
I, Shahrazad attempted. I know, Despina finished.
Lost in their wordless conversation, it took both girls some time to recognize the next figure striding onto the sand. When Shahrazad looked down, she was dismayed by the instant tightening sensation in her chest. She knitted her brow and pressed her lips into a line. The caliph's shoulders were tan and lean. Each of the muscles in his trim torso shone, defined and well articulated in the afternoon sun. Despina sighed.
Despite everything, I have to admit, I've always found him quite handsome. Such a shame.
Again, Shahrazad felt the strange reaction spike within her core.
Yes, it is a shame, she spat.
There's no need to be angry at me for admiring him. Trust that he's the last man I'd ever have designs on. I don't enjoy gambling with my own life.
I wasn't angry at you, Shahrazad protested. I don't care if you or anyone else admires him.
Despina's eyes danced with amusement, and then the caliph drew his sword. It was a unique weapon, not as wide as a scimitar, nor as sharply curved. The blade was thin, and its point tapered to a more severe angle than all the other swords Shahrazad had seen so far.
"Do you know the name of that weapon?" she asked.
"It's called a shamshir." As the caliph began his drill, Shahrazad found herself gripping the top of the wall, seeking a better vantage point. Like the Rajput, he slashed and arced so quickly it was almost impossible to discern the location of the blade. But where the Rajput's superior strength granted him the ability to radiate menace without shifting a muscle, the caliph's far more agile form underscored the subtle grace, the cunning instincts behind every motion. Halfway through the drill, he placed both hands on the hilt of his shamshir and twisted the handle apart. The sword split in two, and he began swinging one in either hand. The blades tore through the air like a dust devil in the desert, whistling about his head as he made his way across the sand. Shahrazad heard Despina catch her breath. The twin shamshirs rained a shower of sparks as he struck them against each other and brought the drill to an end with a sword positioned in each hand at his sides. Again, a riotous cheer rang through the throng of soldiers standing witness to the spectacle. Whatever one's personal feelings about the caliph, it could not be denied he was a masterful swordsman. Nor was he a king solely reliant on the protection of others. He would not be an easy man to kill.
And this presents a serious challenge.
Well, does that satisfy your curiosity? Despina asked.
Yes, my lady, does it?
A gruff voice announced its presence behind them. Both girls scrambled to their feet, still trying to remain unseen by the soldiers below. The color drained from Shahrazad's face. The Sharban of Rey was standing across the way, his face a mask of false composure, and his eyes filled with frustration. General Al-Khoury. Shahrzad brushed the debris from her hands and her clothes. He continued studying her, some kind of war raging behind his eyes. When the battle was over, it was obvious Shahrzad had lost.
What are you doing here, my lady?
I was curious.
I see. And may I ask, who gave you permission to be here, my lady?
At this, Shahrzad's indignation rose. He might be the Sharban of Rey and a good deal older than she, but she had done nothing to warrant such disrespect. She was his queen, after all, not a child to be scolded for misbehaving. She strode forward.
I did not seek permission from anyone, General Al-Khoury, nor shall I seek permission from anyone in the future for anything.
He inhaled carefully, his brown eyes, so like Jalal's, and yet so dissimilar, narrowing invectively.
I'm afraid we can't allow you to behave thus, my lady. You see, it is my job to protect the king and this kingdom, and you conflict with my job. I'm sorry. I can't let you continue to do this.
Does he know?
I thank you, General Al-Khoury.
Excuse me, my lady?
It's never been a question of who is going to let me behave a certain way. It's always been a question of who is going to stop me. I thank you for answering it.
The older gentleman leaned back onto his heels for a moment, staring down at the impudent girl with the flashing colors in her hazel eyes and the small hands positioned on her hips.
I am sorry, my lady, sorrier than you will ever know, but threats against the caliph must be eliminated.
I am not a threat, General Al-Khoury,
and I intend to make sure it stays that way.
Oh God, how does he know?
A silk cord and a sunrise. The Sharban of Rey suspects I might harm the king. Shahrzad listened to Despina's incessant chatter as they spent the rest of the afternoon lounging in the warm waters of the palace's newest addition, commenting where it was appropriate and jesting where it was not. But her mind refused to allow her a moment's respite.
What if he says something to the caliph? How much does he know? How did he find out?
Now, many hours later, she sat on her bed in a darkened chamber, back at the beginning, staring at doors and fending away demons. She was dressed in wide silk trousers and a fitted top stained a deep violet color, with thick straps that banded over each shoulder. The necklace and thin chain at her waist contained amethysts surrounded by tiny pale pink diamonds. At her ears and along her brow were large teardrops of purple and gold. Her waist-length hair hung in shining waves down her back. Shahrzad willed the doors to open with the force of her unflinching stare. Met by the same stoic silence as always, she rose from the bed and began pacing.
He's usually here by now.
Unwilling and incapable of leaving her fate in the hands of others, she walked to the doors and pulled one open. The Rajput turned in place, his hand resting on the hilt of his talwar. Shahrzad felt the fear leech its way onto her heart, felt it tug at the corners of her eyes and mouth.
Do you know if...
She tried. She gritted her teeth.
Is he coming?
She asked. The Rajput merely stared down at her, a lethal statue of muscle and menace.
Can you tell me where he is?
She demanded, the tenor of her voice clearly trying to compensate for her waning courage. At this, Shahrzad saw the tiniest flicker of a response in his dark-as-night gaze.
Pity? He pities me.
She slammed the door shut and leaned against it, her chest starting to heave.
No.
She stifled a sob.
Enough. That's enough.
Shahrazad stood upright and walked with her head high to the bed. She fell back onto the silken pillows, her eyes still trained on the doors.
He'll come, she said into the darkness. I know it.
As she clung to this last thread of hope, two words kept resonating in her mind, taunting her, plaguing her with a meaning she should not see. These two words from a boy who was less than nothing. These two words that gave her the will to fight off the demons.
My queen.
The groan of the doors opening brought Shahrazad out of a restless half-sleep, and the light of pure dawn streaming through the wooden screens shot her to her feet. Standing at the threshold were four soldiers. Shahrazad straightened her rumpled clothing and cleared her throat. Is it not customary to knock first? They all looked past her without answering. Their eyes bore an air of grim detachment. Shahrazad clasped her hands behind her back, forcing herself to stand up straight. What are you doing here? Without a word, the soldier in front stepped into the room and moved towards Shahrazad, still looking to a spot beyond her. As though she had ceased to exist.
Her heart. Her heart.
I asked you a question. The soldier took hold of her shoulder. When Shahrazad reached up to smack his hand away, he trapped her wrist and grasped tightly. Don't touch me! The soldier nodded to his subordinates, and another grim-faced dragoon seized her by the arm. The blood flew through her body, soaring on a mixture of terror and rage.
Stop!
They began to drag her from the room. When she tried to wrench free and kick at them, they merely lifted her off the floor as though she were trussed-up game, caught for sport.
Where is the Caliph? She cried.
Stop. Do not beg.
I want to speak to the Caliph.
Not a single one of the soldiers even paused to glance at her.
Listen to me, she screamed. Please.
They continued half-carrying, half-dragging her struggling form down the marble halls of the palace. The servants they passed averted their gazes. They all knew, just as the soldiers knew. There was nothing to see. It was then Shahrazad realized the inescapable truth. She was nothing. She meant nothing. To the soldiers, to the servants. She stopped struggling. She raised her head and pressed her lips tightly together.
Baba and Irsa, Shiva and Tariq.
She meant something to them, and she would not disgrace their memory of her by making a scene. Her failure was disgrace enough. As the soldiers pushed open the doors into the dawn and Shahrazad saw her death before her, it was this last thought that thrust its final weight upon her, breaking the dam.
Shiva.
Silent tears streamed down her face, unchecked.
Let go of me, she rasped. I won't run.
The three soldiers looked to the first. After a wordless conversation, they placed Shahrazad on her bare feet. The gray granite pavestones felt cool to the touch, the warm rays not having seeped into their gritty surface yet. The grass on either side was blue from the silver light of an early morning sun. For a moment, Shahrazad considered stooping to run her hands through it. One last time. They filed to a covered alcove, where another soldier and an older woman stood waiting. In the woman's hand was a long piece of white linen, fluttering in an all-but-dead breeze. A shroud, and in the soldier's hand, a single stretch of silk cord. The tears continued their final trek down her face, but Shahrazad refused to utter a sound. She stepped to the soldier. His arms were thick and burly.
I hope it will be quick.
Without a word, she turned around.
I'm sorry,
he whispered so softly it might have been the wind.
Startled by his kindness, she almost looked back at her would-be murderer.
Thank you. In absolution. He lifted her hair gently and brought the dark wave